Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and when the Hudson River Park was but a glimmer in the eyes of developers back in 1995, it was devised as a self-sustaining park. But more than 10 years out, and with 60% of the park still to be finished, questions loom over the viability of so-called self-sustaining parks. To get us behind the controversy, we're joined by WNYC reporter Matthew Sherman first, who covers economic development and infrastructure for WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Brian.
And welcome to the staff.
Thank you.
To come on to talk about these things New York Observer correspondent.
That's right. Glad to be here.
And you did such a great job that we stole you away for WNYC. Now, Hudson River Park was conceived to be self-sustaining, as I said. What does that actually mean?
That means that the state and the city would pay for the capital construction, turning the piers into a park, and the park would be allowed to raise revenue from parking spaces, from concessions, from renting out three piers to developers to do something with. Chelsea Piers is, in fact, a tenant of Hudson River Park and pays a lot of the expenses, day-to-day expenses of maintaining that park. And there are two other piers that that the park is trying to find developers for.
Where are they?
One is at Pier 57 at about 15th Street. You take these pier numbers and you subtract 40, and that's how you get the street number. So Pier 57 is at about 15th Street, and Pier 40 is at Houston Street.
And is it a problem?
Well, yes. Last week, the developer, the preferred developer for Pier 57, who was chosen back in 2004-2005, dropped out after not really being able to finalize the deal and saying that the construction costs had gotten too high. That was supposed to be a catering hall. And Pier 40, there are three competing proposals for Pier 40, and this Thursday, the Hudson River Park Trust will deliberate over those three proposals.
Can you break them down real quick?
Sure. The most lavish one is proposed by the related companies. That's the one where they would bring in Cirque du Soleil, a performance space for Cirque du Soleil, another performance space, movie theaters, as well as parking, other sorts of retail. There's something called the People's Pier, which is being proposed by two lesser-known groups, Camp Group and Urban Dove. They would have a summer camp during the summer, a high school and a college there, basketball courts for the use of public school students who don't have gym facilities, and a marina. And then there's a third proposal that's not an official proposal because it came in too late, but a number of neighbors in Greenwich Village who are very passionate about what happens in their neighborhood came up with a nonprofit proposal, maintaining the playing fields that are there, bringing in a school and a visual arts space.
And just by way of context, when you talk about Hudson River Park, how much of the Hudson River waterfront are you talking about?
It's basically from 59th Street down to Chambers Street, and then there's a bike path that goes into Battery Park City that's also considered part of the park. It's about 4 miles long.
And we are also joined now by Diana Taylor, who is the chair of the Hudson River Park Trust. Ms. Taylor, thanks so much for coming on WNYC with us.
Oh, thank you very much, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
So there's been a lot of community participation in the Pier 40 bidding process. I'm familiar with it because my own kids have played ball there, and I know there's a lot of strong community sentiment against developing in certain ways that might reduce the amount of playing field opportunities. What are you looking to do at Pier 40 at Houston Street in the Hudson River?
Well, one thing that I want to emphasize is that a part of the RFP that went out, one of the requirements for people responding was that the amount of the pier devoted to playing fields has to stay at least the same. So under any circumstances, no matter what happens to the pier, we will have the same amount of space devoted to playing fields and maybe more.
Then why are people so upset about it?
Would
the nature of it change?
Well, I think that's what a lot of the community, Diana, I think that's what a lot of the community is worried about. They're worried particularly about the traffic of people who would be going to Cirque du Soleil performances.
Yeah, well, one thing to remember here is that, as you said earlier in the program, the park is self-sustaining. That's the way it was designed. And I think that the philosophy behind that is a very good one. You don't want in down budget years, which we could be coming up on over the next few years if the economy keeps going the way it is, you don't want money taken away from the parks and have them deteriorate. And a waterfront park is very expensive to maintain, and it's very important to keep it maintained because it is a waterfront park and it's right along the river and there are bulkheads and that sort of thing. And the problem is that in order to do that, you have to draw people because people spend money and that's where you get the money from to pay for whatever it is that you're paying for. Now, Pier 40 is a very interesting place. It's enormous. It takes up a huge amount of space, and there's a lot of stuff that can be put on it. And what's happened is that there are a lot of people in the village in that area who have been using the pier and the playing fields on those piers, very rightly so, and their kids play there and that sort of thing. Now, the problem is that we have, and I think that we've all stipulated now, about $128 million worth of repair work to do to the pier just to bring it up to code. What's on it now is just playing fields and parking. And the parking throws off a certain amount of revenue. We are going to lose both of those things if we can't repair the pier. So that money has to come from somewhere. And also, on top of that, people want to build certain things, which takes a lot more money. So the proposal that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. the Pier 40 partnership, they have put together what is really a very nice plan, but it's going to cost a lot of money, and you have to get that money back somehow. And the only way to get money back is to have people go on the pier. And we are, as a board, looking at the two proposals, which were the response to the RFP.
In other words, they have to be commercially viable.
They have to be commercially viable. And in order to be commercially viable, you have to have people going there. And if you don't have the people going there, then you're not going to be able to make the money back to pay off the bonds or the equity, you know, have a return on equity or however it gets financed.
Is there something gained and something lost from a public policy perspective when you set up a public park to be self-sustaining and thereby require some kind of private commercial activity?
Yeah, I think so. And there are different philosophies on this. There's one end of the spectrum of people who think that a park is a park and you shouldn't have anything else in it other than park open space related uses and water related uses, which is fine, but then somebody has to pay for it. At the other end of the spectrum, you have people who think that there should be commercial uses in parks, and the commercial uses, the money should be used to maintain the park. So we're in an instance here where the legislation says that this is a self-sustaining park, and I think that if you talk to anybody in government at either the city or the state level, they will tell you that there is no money to maintain this park. So it's got to come from somewhere, and it has to come from commercial uses in the park.
So at this hearing Thursday, will you be advocating one of the particular plans?
Actually, it's not a hearing. It's a board meeting.
Uh-huh.
So the only people who will be talking are board members. And what we're going to do is, among the board, have an open discussion about the pros and cons of each of the proposals. Each of the two RFP responses, which are the related and the camp group, and we will also discuss the proposal that was put in by the parents group, the Pier 40 partnership.
And what would you like to see?
I would love to see one of the proposals come out and be approved. I'm not sure that that's going to happen because there are concerns that we have as board members on each of the two proposals and on the parents group. What we need to do, we're sort of in the middle of this, we need to come up with something that is financially viable, that throws off the money that we need to have thrown off for the park and for the pier, but also is something that the community can live with, because anything that we approve in this process also has to go through another approval process, which is the ULIP process that the city has.
That's the Universal Land
Use
review process.
Right, exactly.
Which is a public process. Our real estate reporter, Matt Sherman, is also here, and he'd like to ask you a question.
Yes, if I could, Diana. I've heard that the amount of money that the trust expects to receive from either the related or People's Pier proposal is about the same, that the concerns are really which developer would have the financial wherewithal to go through with their plan. Can you comment on that at all?
That is definitely a concern. I'm not going to discuss the actual, you know, financial specifics of the proposals, but that is a very big concern. We need to know that whoever is developing this pier actually has the financial wherewithal to do it.
Why is it taking so long? If this park was 10 years ago set up as a self-sustaining park, and here in 2008, 60% of it is yet to be finished, why is that? Is that something about the self-sustaining structure?
Well, part of it is that we have developed it as we have gotten money from the state and the city. As was pointed out earlier, the capital costs are being paid for by the state and the city. And for each thing that we do, I mean, remember, it's a waterfront park. Anytime you do anything on the waterfront, you have to go through a series of approvals by the state environmental, the Department of Environmental Conservation. You have to make sure that you have all the city permits in place. And it takes a long time to redo piers. But we have completed 40% of the park, and if we get the funding that we think we're getting from the state and the city, over the next 2 years, we will have finished 80% of the park by 2009, by the end of 2009. And the other 20% are things like the Ganzevoort area, where the state and the city are in discussions about sanitation facilities, and there's the tow pound. So there are various other parts of the park that are still under discussion by the state and the city as to what exactly they want to have done with them.
Diana Taylor is chair of the Hudson River Park Trust. They'll be having that board meeting on Thursday. Ms. Taylor, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And we continue on this with WNYC real estate correspondent Matt Sherman. Matt, what are the implications of this Hudson River Park controversy for other public parks?
Well, the other public park that springs to mind is the Brooklyn Bridge Park, which is set up under the same sort of self-sustaining model, capital costs being paid for by the city and state and Port Authority, actually. And I think the question raised is there's not just the ideological question of whether or not it makes sense for a self-sustaining park to operate in that way, but really whether or not it's viable or how viable it is. The delays in awarding these development proposals stems, I think, in part because of the community resistance to turning these public spaces over to private developers. And so as a result, there's just a question of how practical it is to put this ideology into place.
Now, we have a parent of a child who uses Pier 40 who is calling in and wants to react to all of this. Gene in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Gene.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My kids, both of my children have been using the Pier 40 fields. And, yeah, we're very uncomfortable having private developers involved. Although out of the three, I guess the community proposal I prefer the best. The second one is I forget the name of it, but it's not the related one. The related one is the one that we don't like because that's really a private corporation that's going to build all kinds of things that we really don't want. Eventually, we feel we'll be choked off from that park.
Like what? What would go there under the related companies?
I think
proposal?
They're talking about movie theaters, the Cirque du Soleil, a variety of other private things, and eventually we feel we're going to be cut off from the field.
And when Diana Taylor says there's going to be a guarantee in any of these developments that the amount of ball field space, a lot of kids play soccer there, baseball there, will not be diminished, that's not good enough for you?
At first, I'm sure they'll stick to that at first, but as time goes on, I mean, I've seen it before, even the Mitchell Lama programs, you know, eventually those mm-hmm. companies right. want to get out of that. So, I mean, it's not, that is meaningless, really, in the grand scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be with my children down at the, when they vote. We want to make sure our voice is heard.
On Thursday at that meeting.
On Thursday, yeah.
Okay, Gene, thanks a lot. And grown-ups play there, too. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's a big artificial turf green space with the lines down for soccer fields and baseball fields, and there are all kinds of organized leagues that play there. Matt, what about the skepticism about the guarantee? You heard Gene's particular concern that over time, if there's enough other commercial activity there, movie theaters, whatever, there'll just be pressure on the open space to be encroached upon.
It's hard to say, just because I think this is a fairly new idea of creating a self-sustaining park with private uses inside of it. Clearly, all of our parks have concession stands of one sort or other, so we do have that model to go with. One difference, though, the caller brought up Mitchell Lama. Mitchell Lama was constructed to last only for 20 years, and in exchange for a cheap mortgage, the developer would keep rents low on apartments. In this case, this would be a lease for 30 years, and then at the end of 30 years, really that land would revert back to the park.
And here's a question via email that says, I've played soccer in a league at Pier 40 and wonder who currently keeps up the fields. Is it the city?
It's currently the Hudson River Park Trust who's running those fields now.
Where do they get their money?
They do have a lot of money coming in from concessions, from, you know, hot dog stands, Chelsea Piers. A lot of, frankly, is the parking there is actually very lucrative. I think on the order of $5 million a year, Pier 40 is currently used for parking.
Darren in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Darren.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
I just finished a research project on the Hudson River Park, actually, and I focused on stakeholders that aren't property owners within the West Village in particular. But it's a unique situation because they are definitely a community that relies on the park for social gathering and for community support and basically for a lot of the resources that they wouldn't be provided in their communities for a variety of reasons. And I think this conversation is very interesting because it portrays the extreme difficulty in integrating those types of communities into the decision-making process when the problem is always portrayed in the beginning as one of financial means, which certainly it is. But I don't know, I just wanted mm-hmm. to enter that into the mm-hmm. discussion, the possibility that these people may or may not ever have a voice in the planning process and how it's possible to potentially integrate.
Darren, thank you. And Matt, we have 15 seconds.
One thing I'd like to say is that this is a new park, and it's not quite the same as taking an existing park and privatizing some of that space. So it's a question of where do you get the money to pay for an absolutely new park.
All right. Real quick, different topic. Do you know if there's any truth to the rumor that the Shake Shack might set up shop in Union Square? It's been outrageously successful selling their shakes in Madison Square Park.
Clearly, Danny Meyer would be interested in doing something like that. I don't have an inside line as to likelihood.
There is opposition in that area, I know, from people who don't want it to become a madhouse with people lining up for shakes in Union Square Park. But Matt Sherman, WNYC's new Economic Development and Infrastructure Reporter, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
See you all tonight at 7 for Florida primary returns. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.